do we exist? Were we created with a purpose, or are we just here by chance? What are we to believe about life, faith, and worldview? Welcome to The Universe Next Door, focusing on answers to the questions we all consider. Join us as we seek to see a generation captivated and transformed by the truth of Christianity. This is The Universe Next Door.
Welcome to The Universe Next Door. I hope all of you had a wonderful Easter and a wonderful Holy Week. Here at my church, we did a lot. We had a big thing last Saturday, like the Saturday prior to last Saturday. We had a Palm Sunday outside thing. We had two concerts, actually, technically. And then, of course, Easter service, which went great. And I don't know about you, but we had... I mean, on Easter, you always have more people than usual, of course. But we had more people than the usual Easter when we have more people. We had like a ton of people. And I've heard that from a lot of different churches online or elsewhere, that everyone was packed. I have a good friend of mine who has a church up in Newport Richey, and he said they had the biggest attendance they've ever had. And so that is wonderful to see for a number of reasons. Don't know if you had that same experience. And if you didn't, that's fine, of course. I mean, you know, every church is different, and that's cool. But let me know what you guys saw too, because I just thought that was really cool. And it's probably telling of a few things too that actually we're going to be talking about today. We're going to continue this upcoming week, hopefully this upcoming week, God willing. We're going to get back to and continue our series, Are You Sure You Know What This Verse Means? Where we go through different verses and Bible passages, mostly popular stories that you've heard of, or at least verses you've heard of, and kind of look at what else they could mean that we could be missing. There might be a deeper meaning to these things. And so we're going to continue that, God willing, this upcoming week. But I had to take a pause from it today to address the stuff that happened over the Easter weekend on the Trans Day of Visibility and all that. And what we're going to do is we're going to go through the proclamation from the Biden administration, and I'm going to show you line by line what is going on. And I'm also going to show you some sources that are much older that are telling us as well what's happening here. But the first thing we have to understand, before we even understand the first thing, is that nothing is a coincidence. I know that some of you probably noticed that this took place on Easter this year, and that's not a coincidence. I'm going to show you a few reasons why, but we have to recognize that. If there's two things about the government we need to know, it's number one, when they do something, it isn't a coincidence. Number two, when they do something that you think is compassionate or that seems like it's supposed to be compassionate, from the left or the right, there's always a reason behind it. Okay, they're not doing anything to be compassionate. There's always a reason there. So we're going to cover some of that stuff here today. I really am annoyed that I have to do this. And by have to, I mean I feel compelled to, because I think if the church isn't recognizing these things and calling it out, I think if the church continues to just hide when these things come up, then who's going to be there to make a difference? Who's going to be there to call anything out? And we have to call these things out if we want to recognize them. But I'm annoyed that I am, with that being said, I guess having to do this, because I want to talk about the Divine Council. I want to talk about Genesis 15. I want to talk about these passages we have ready, which we will. But this is too important to pass up. And these things are going to continue building. That's how this system works. That's how this plan, for lack of a better term, works. And we'll get into that too. But none of this is an accident. And so we're going to go through the actual letter, and I'm going to cross-reference a few things too. But before we do that, make sure you hit follow. And especially when I do an episode like this, I'm bound to have people unfollow the show. And so it'd be really helpful not only if you hit follow, but also if you would share this episode with a friend, with somebody who maybe you want to start a conversation with, somebody you talk with or whatever, maybe a coworker, because this isn't only for Christians. What's going on here, and especially with this stuff taking place on Easter, people who aren't Christian recognize this too. Okay, don't think it's only Christians, and don't think it's only people on the right. There are plenty of people who consider themselves Democrat who aren't on board with grooming, who aren't on board with a lot of the things that are transpiring. And so don't think you have to only talk to Christians about these things. We have to be willing to call these things out and to expose them. And so thank you so much for that. And what we're going to be covering today, again, before we just get started here, is this proclamation of the Transgender Day of Visibility. First of all, taking place on Easter, but that's not the only thing we're talking about. That's just one of many parts of it. And the best thing I could do to describe this is, I actually don't have an analogy to describe it, but if you just picture this proclamation or this letter we're going through, there are strings attached to every single sentence in it, okay? I guess that's technically an analogy because I said strings and there's not literal strings. But there are strings attached to everything in here. None of this stuff just came out of nowhere. All of this has deeper meaning to it. And of course, at the end, throughout the episode, we're going to talk about how we should react as Christians and as American. If you're not a believer, I hope this show will change that. I hope the Lord will change your heart. I hope and pray that you would come to know Christ and the wonderful life that we find in Him. But whether you're Christian or not, we have to know how to react to this and how not to react to this. And by this Easter thing is just one example of how we should look at things every time they happen. We have to be proactive so that we can react the right way and be prepared and not be thrown off and not give the reaction that they want us to give. So let's start just by going through the letter. Some parts we'll spend more time on than other parts, but let's just start right at the beginning and read it through so I don't leave anything out. This, of course, was published on March 29th, 2024. On Transgender Day of Visibility, we honor the extraordinary courage and contributions of transgender Americans and reaffirm our nation's commitment to forming a more perfect union, where all people are created equal and treated equally throughout their lives. I am proud that my administration has stood for justice from the start, working to ensure that the LGBTQI+ community, oh, they forgot A. I guess they don't care about A. Plus community can live openly in safety with dignity and respect. So pause. Notice how they're setting it up so far. They're trying to make it out to seem like the current administration, the Biden administration, has just been working from start to finish on quote unquote justice, which is not defined the same way we define justice today. But they've been working nonstop to ensure justice for the LGBT community so that they can live openly, safely, with dignity and respect. So notice the implication in the underlying presupposition here. The underlying presupposition is that without the Biden administration, before this last few years, when they just worked so hard to accomplish this, LGBT people couldn't live openly and safely and with dignity and respect. That's the assumption here, right? That's the underlying point as we set this up. So he goes on and says, I am proud to have appointed transgender leaders to my administration and to have ended the ban on transgender Americans serving openly in our military. I am proud to have signed historic executive orders that strengthen civil rights protections in housing, employment, healthcare, education, the justice system, and more. I am proud to have signed the Respect for Marriage Act into law, ensuring that every American can marry the person that they love. So again, a couple things here. We haven't even gotten into anything yet. This is just setting it up. But a couple things. When he says, I'm proud to have appointed transgender leaders to my administration. So again, this is the idea of equity. Okay, and so this concept of inclusion we often hear, we covered this a little bit on the He Gets Us episode. But the idea of inclusion here is exclusion. And that's what we have to understand about the woke definition of inclusion. It isn't what you think it is. It isn't like, oh, the kid's a little bit younger than us, but we should let them play football with us and maybe go easy on them. No, in this case, inclusion is exclusion. Somebody has to be excluded in order for someone to be accommodated. That's what inclusion is. And so this idea that we should have this sexual orientation of person, this color of person, this gender of person, rather than just the best person for the job, is equity, and equity is communism. That's what communism is. And if you think all of this stuff is just happening by accident or because they're compassionate, remember, anything the government does that looks like it's supposed to be compassionate is never compassionate. There's always a reason behind it. There's always something attached. It doesn't matter what it is. And so this idea of equity, of appointing this gender leader or this color leader or whatever it may be, not because they're the best person for the job, but because of those things, is equity. And it's exactly what Martin Luther King didn't fight for. He wanted his children to be judged, as we all know, on the content of their character, not on the color of their skin or anything of that nature. So this is exactly what wasn't actually fought for in the true civil rights movement. And you're also going to see this in the Respect for Marriage Act law that he mentioned here that was put into place at the end of 2022. We're not going to break that down. I just wanted to show you one thing. If you pull it up on the government website, congress.gov, and we go down a little bit, it says, this act provides statutory authority for same-sex and interracial marriages. So notice that. What they're trying to imply is that interracial marriages were not legal prior. Okay, so that has nothing to do with anything. We're not going to get into the LGBT stuff on this right now. I just wanted to point that out to you. You can see how these things are snuck in all over the place, and they're trying to give you the impression that certain people, certain racial minorities or sexual minorities or women are considered minority, even though they are the majority in our country. So there's that. They're trying to give you the impression that these people are oppressed and that you're the oppressor. There's going to be much more of that in a few minutes here. But that's the setup here. You're either the oppressed or the oppressor. That's what Marxism is. And that's what it intends to instill in you from a very young age now. So everything we just read so far is just, it's setting up the rest of the letter, and it's virtue signaling. So he goes on to say, transgender Americans are part of the fabric of our nation. Whether serving their communities or in the military, raising families, or running businesses, they help America thrive. They deserve and are entitled to the same rights and freedoms as every other American, including the most fundamental freedom to be their true selves. So let's pause here. So again, we see this concept of they have the freedom to be their true selves. Well, what do you mean by that? First of all, is somebody's true self the person they imagine to be, that they would have to go through a physical change to be, or is your true self the person that you actually are? So we're not talking about changing things like, you know what, I don't feel like who I am, or who I am right now is who I really am. I need to get in shape. I need to do. That's not what's meant here. What's meant is that this person that you could go through hormone change, you could go through surgery, you could go through all these things to become. That's who you really are. And as we're going to see in a couple sentences later, this starts with children. This starts with kids. That a four-year-old knows who they're really supposed to be. They have the wisdom to determine that, and you have to listen to them. So you see this idea about the fundamental freedom to be their true selves. And again, you have this concept of transgender Americans being part of the fabric of our nation. Well, depending on what you mean by that, every American is part of the fabric of our nation, regardless of their opinions on different things for the most part. But this letter is doing the opposite. Notice how it says transgender Americans. So you have transgender Americans, you have white Americans, you have black Americans, you have rather than just Americans. Okay, so these little terms here, there are all these points of division in the letter. There are all these points of division that you're going to see all over the place, whether it's on social media, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's on the news, whether it's in church sometimes. We see all of these points of division that have now been forced on everybody, and we need to be careful not to accept them so readily. So he goes on and says, but extremists, okay, so here's a loaded term, right? But extremists are proposing hundreds of hateful laws that target and terrify transgender kids and their families, silencing teachers, banning books, and even threatening parents, doctors, and nurses with prison for helping parents get care for their children. So again, we could spend a lot of time on this concept of the doctors and parents stuff. We actually did an episode fairly recently with Alicia Wood, who's part of the apologetics.org team, so I'll link that in the description below too. There'll be a couple episodes down there. I would highly suggest that you check them out. But we went into a lot more detail on this topic. I'll still talk about it a little bit here. But the main thing that we see here, starting at the beginning of the sentence, was that loaded term, extremists. So notice, the people who think that a boy is a boy and a girl is a girl, and that children shouldn't be mutilated and have their genitals cut off, those people are extremists. Why do you think that's being said? Think about it. Because they want to change the norm. That's what you see all over the place. That's what you've seen happening, especially over the last several years, but it's been leading up to this for a long time. They're attempting to change the norm, and it seems like they're successfully doing it. Everything has changed. The people who are trying to suggests that we keep what's always been normal are the people who are called extremists. And the extremists are the oppressors, right? The extremists are the oppressors who are keeping, in this case, the trans people. The trans people are just who are helpful in this letter. They use whoever they can. But in this case, the trans people are the ones who are being oppressed. They're the ones who are being kept from their rights. They're the ones who are being kept from their freedom. They're the ones who are being kept from being their true selves. So you have this oppression dynamic at play here, of course. So extremists are proposing hundreds of hateful laws that target and terrify transgender kids. Notice that. Transgender kids and their families. Like what? I didn't see any footnote down bottom. What are these hundreds of hateful laws that target and terrify transgender kids and their families? If I asked somebody, I would imagine they would point to the quote-unquote Don't Say Gay bill, which, again, from the left's perspective, was a brilliant way to label that bill and try to turn it around, which they, in some cases, successfully did. Because what the bill actually did was it said teachers cannot groom children in kindergarten. And so what the bill brilliantly did is it exposed all of these people who want to groom children in kindergarten. And what the left has brilliantly done is they have spun it to call it the Don't Say Gay bill. They try to make it look out to look like it's this bill that just if anybody says gay, they'll go to jail. And so you have both things at play here. But the question is, what are all these hundreds of hateful laws that target and terrify transgender kids and their families? They don't exist. Okay, they don't exist. And they go on and say silencing teachers. Well, we just talked about that a little bit. Banning books and even threatening parents, doctors, and nurses with prison for helping parents get care for their children. Now, again, by doctors, you mean people who are mutilating children. You mean people who are injecting things into children that are meant to keep cancer from spreading in your body. And they're injecting them into children to keep them from growing, to keep them from the actual healthy physical trajectory of their growth through their teenage years. They're injecting things into their body to keep them from doing that. They're cutting off their genitals. Again, I hate to keep saying that because it's disgusting, but this is what's happening. If that's what you mean by doctors, well, A, they should be in prison. B, there aren't nearly enough people pushing for that. Most of the people who share that opinion are hiding. But again, they call it care for their children. They're keeping the doctors and nurses and wanting to throw them in prison for helping parents get care for their children. This is care. Remember, everything's upside down. The norm is thrown out and it's replaced with a new norm. These bills attack our most basic American values, the freedom to be yourself, the freedom to make your own healthcare decisions, and even the right to raise your own child. Now, this is what is referred to as gaslighting. And for those of you who may not be familiar with the term gaslighting, most of you probably are, but if you're not familiar with the term gaslighting, it's a concept where someone is manipulated by you putting forth something that will cause them to question themselves, and often by turning the narrative around. So in this case, many, many people know, I mean, it's even a slogan that Moms for Liberty uses, that we don't co-parent with the government. We don't want the government raising our children, regardless of your political affiliation. We don't want the government enforcing things on our children that we have to do. In Canada, kids are even taken away from their parents when they don't want to mutilate their children. But you have this concept that everybody's aware with. And so what do they try to do? They try to make you question that. They try to make you turn it around. And they try to say, no. By doing these things, the parents have all the autonomy to parent their children. And so they're gaslighting here. This is a classic move that we see all the time. They're gaslighting into trying to make you question yourself. And I just can't believe anybody would buy into this, but a lot of people will. He says, it is no surprise that the bullying and discrimination that transgender Americans face is worsening our nation's mental health crisis, leading half of transgender youth to consider suicide in the past year. So again, we see the gaslighting. Okay, first of all, I don't know where they're getting their statistics, but it is true that many transgender people struggle with depression, with anxiety, with autism, with ADHD, and there are many reasons that they're facing any kind of mental health circumstance. And this is becoming more and more undeniable. So what do? They try to spin it and they try to say, oh, no, they're only facing those things because people oppress them, because people bully them, because people steal their freedom and put them down. When in reality, most likely the reason that they're trying to go through any kind of quote-unquote transition here from male to female or female to male, it's usually female to male, but the reason they're probably doing this is based off of these things, is based off of A, of course, the depression, anxiety, autism, or ADHD, and instead of getting them the actual help that they need, what happens is the government steps in. The school system, who's also the government, steps in, okay? And they're groomed and they're taught that you're not who you're supposed to be. Remember, we saw that at the beginning of the letter. You're not who you're supposed to be. If you want to fix any of this, you need to transition. You need to be somebody different. You need to be reborn if you want to fix this problem. You're not who you're supposed to be. And so this is forced on them. They're groomed from a young age, which of course we've seen several times in this letter and outside of this letter. We know that these kids are being groomed in schools and we need to do something about it. So they gaslight here. They mention all the transgender youth either committing suicide or having mental health problems. And at the same time, an epidemic of violence against transgender women and girls, especially women and girls of color, continues to take too many lives. Let me be clear. All of these attacks are un-American and must end. No one should have to be brave just to be themselves. Did you notice that there's no statistic of any sort listed here? An epidemic of violence against transgender women and girls, especially women and girls of color, continues to take too many lives. Like who? When does this happen? Where does this happen? This doesn't happen. This is not an epidemic. This doesn't even exist. Violence against the transgender community, if that's what you want to call it, or specifically against the transgender community of color, does not exist. There's no evidence of this. There's no statistics showing this. This is literally made up out of thin air to push a narrative that doesn't exist. And they know this. If you're under the impression, again, that the stuff is in here because the government is compassionate, this is in here because they need to push a narrative and an agenda regardless of the cost. And in this case, the cost is ruining the lives of many children and adults. The cost is allowing young people to fall further and further into depression, into anxiety, into physical changes they can never undo until they commit suicide. Do you think that's compassionate? So the letter goes on to say, at the same time, my administration is working to stop the bullying and harassment of transgender children and their families. The Department of Justice has taken action to push back against extreme, there we go again, and un-American state laws targeting transgender youth and their families. And the Department of Justice is partnering with law enforcement, the ones who haven't been defunded, and community groups to combat hate and violence. My administration is also providing dedicated emergency mental health support through our nationwide suicide and crisis lifeline. Any LGBTQIA plus young person in need can call 988 and press 3 to speak with a counselor trained to support them. We are making public services more accessible for transgender Americans, including with more inclusive passports and easier access to Social Security benefits. There is much more to do. I continue to call on the Congress to pass the Equality Act to codify civil rights protections for all LGBTQI plus Americans. Now, as we mentioned in the beginning of the episode, this is the first year you've probably heard about this. Now, some people say, oh, this goes back 15 years. Some people point to 2021 with the Biden administration and this quote-unquote holiday. It's not a coincidence that this is the first time you've heard about it. And it takes place on Easter. And before I read you an excerpt from Paulo Freire, if you haven't listened to the episode on that we did on the Marxification of Education by James Lindsay, make sure you check that out and read that book. If you haven't read that book, you need to. If you want to understand what's going on in the education system, it's not just a teacher here and there that's just off the wall. This is the actual education system effectively and successfully being replaced with Marxism. So read that book if you haven't. It's less than 200 pages. I'd highly recommend it. But I'm going to read you something from Paulo Freire, the guy who's responsible, essentially, for bringing Marxism into education in the United States. And this was pretty much done and set by the mid-90s. But I'm going to read you an excerpt that James Lindsay had posted from him. And it And I think it's really going to help you understand sort of the concept here. And again, these concepts, they aren't just this one-time thing. Everything you see is tied together. It's not like one thing just pops up and it's a coincidence. It's like what they're doing here is intentional. And we have to realize that, and we have to stop pretending that it isn't. But let's look at this excerpt. This is from Paulo Freire's 1984 book, The Politics of Education. And this is Paulo Freire writing specifically on this concept of Easter, his version of Easter, the Marxist version of Easter. In this version is that the old Easter, the Christian Easter, the quote-unquote historical Easter, that Easter needs to go, it needs to die. The new Easter, the true resurrection, is you being critically conscious to wokeness, you waking up to this, you being critically conscious, and you replacing the old way, the oppressor, with the new way in fighting for the quote-unquote oppressed, as we've already talked about here. So he says, this new apprenticeship will violently break down the elitist concept of existence they had absorbed while being ideologized. The sine qua non the apprenticeship demands is that, first of all, they really experience their own Easter, that they die as elitists so as to be resurrected on the side of the oppressed, that they be born again with the beings who were not allowed to be. Such a process implies a renunciation of myths that are dear to them, the myth of their superiority. Let me pause here. I know there's some weird language. So now he's describing the myths that the quote-unquote elitists believed, that the oppressed believed. In other words, that you believed. Such a process implies a renunciation of myths that are dear to them. So you must renounce these. The myth of their superiority, of their purity of soul, of their virtues. Notice that. So those who celebrate the quote-unquote old Easter, they need to renounce these so-called virtues, and they need to follow what we're saying. They need to recognize that they're the oppressors, and this is the oppressor's religion. So renounce their virtues, their wisdom, the myth that they save the poor, the myth of the neutrality of the church, of theology. Renounce your theology. Education, that's a big one. Science, technology, the myth of their own impartiality. These are all things that need to be renounced, and they need to be brought into the new way, right? From these grow the other myths of the inferiority of other people, of their spiritual and physical impurity, and of the absolute ignorance of the oppressed. So you can see that today they're functioning off of the same thing. We're facing Marxism coming into our country. We have been for a long time. This Easter, which results in the changing of consciousness, must be existentially experienced. Existentially, your whole being and person has to experience this. This new Easter of the changing of consciousness. The real Easter is not commemorative rhetoric. It is praxis. It is historical involvement. So you, if you haven't listened to some of those episodes I've mentioned, you might not know what praxis is. Well, praxis is the concept of putting theory into practice. So if you've ever looked at, let's say, a public school system and said, you know, I know that they're doing something wrong. I know that critical theory is happening. I know that my kids are coming home with some very weird things, but you can't put your finger on it. Well, that's praxis. It's putting theory into practice. They may not be quote-unquote teaching critical theory or critical race theory or whatever, but they're doing it. They're acting it. That's what praxis is. It's putting theory into practice. And they're telling you right here, you'll see this word all over the place once you recognize it. This is what the woke do. They put theory into practice. They do these things rather than just teach them. So the new real Easter is not just rhetoric like the other Easter. It is praxis. It is historical involvement. The old Easter of rhetoric is dead with no hope of resurrection. It is only in the authenticity of historical praxis that Easter becomes the death that makes life possible. Let me read this whole paragraph so I can explain it. The bourgeois worldview, basically necrophiliac, death-loving, and therefore static, is unable to accept the supremely biophiliac, life-loving experience of Easter. The bourgeois mentality, which is far more than just a convenient abstraction, kills the profound historical dynamism of Easter and turns it into no more than a date on the calendar. So notice what's happening here. He's using all of these these terms associated with the true Easter, the Christian Easter, the quote-unquote old Easter, he's using all these terms regarding death. Okay, this represents death. This is still the oppressor's way. The new Easter, okay, the new critical consciousness that you have to adopt and that you have to now see the world through, that's the true Easter. That's how he's defining resurrection here, and that's how he's defining Easter. The bourgeois mentality, he says, kills the true Easter. And it turns it into no more than a date on the calendar. Okay, so the old Easter has to die. The new Easter has to be ushered in. Before we go any further, do you still think it's a coincidence that this new Transvisibility Day took place on Easter Sunday this year? Even if you just give the government the benefit of the doubt, you give the Biden administration the benefit of the doubt, do you think they didn't know that this holiday would take place on Easter 2 years later? And by Biden administration, we don't mean just President Joe Biden going and writing something. We mean whatever it's attached to. None of us know exactly who's running the show, okay? But we know that the UN, the United Nations, is heavily involved. We know that the World Economic Forum is heavily involved. If you haven't gone to the United Nations website and read the 17 sustainability goals, then you need to, because they tell you everything that's happening and why. This isn't a conspiracy theory. It's literally on their website. I mean, you can watch videos from the World Economic Forum and from the UN of them talking about these things. None of this stuff is a secret. I mean, this seems like stuff you would see in a movie, but it's happening in real life. And I think Christians need to be more aware of it. There's nothing spiritual or special about a Christian being unaware of what's going on. Of course, we don't put our hope and our faith in anything other than Christ. We know that God's in control no matter what, but it's naive of any of us, of me, to I guess pretend like it's a good thing or a holy thing for me to just stay out of it and not know what's going on. A lot of people are being harmed with this stuff, and a lot more are going to be harmed. So back to the excerpt from Paulo Freire. The font is kind of small, so I'm sorry. I'm trying to focus in on it here, but so he's doing the contrast between the quote-unquote old Easter, which is actually Easter, Christian Easter, okay, the celebration of the resurrection. And just quickly, by the way, Easter did not come from the goddess Ishtar. There's no evidence for that whatsoever. It's the Germanic term for April, okay, and that's when they celebrated Easter, so for the most part, at least. So just, you see this stuff pop up all the time during this season. You'll see the same stuff at Christmas. It's just always look for sources. Always look for sources. What are your sources for that? So anyway, in this writing from Paulo Freire, we have the old Easter contrasted with the new Easter, the old Easter, the one that you celebrate. That's what needs to go. That symbolizes death, because you're dead in your sin of oppression. You are the oppressor. Okay, that's the whole idea of systemic racism. Systemic racism isn't just the idea that racism exists. Okay, that's not what it is. It's a mystic Gnostic idea that everybody is racist, and whether they realize it or not, you're complicit in it, whether you realize it or not. And the only thing you can do, you can never atone for it. You can never remove the stain of original sin from quote unquote racism or systemic racism. All you can do is continually repent forever. All you can do is do what we say, and stand with the quote unquote oppressed. And that's exactly what we see here in reference to Easter. So he goes on and says, the lust to possess, a sign of the necrophiliac worldview, rejects the deeper meaning of resurrection. Why should I be interested in rebirth if I hold in my hands, as objects to be possessed, the torn body and soul of the oppressed? I can only experience rebirth at the side of the oppressed by being born again, with them in the process of liberation. So there you go. You can only be born again with them in the process of liberation for the oppressed. He says, I cannot turn such a rebirth into a means of owning the world, since it is essentially a means of transforming the world. And there you go. They're attempting to transform the world, to transform our country. We've seen a lot of things that you never thought you were going to see over the last several years in regard to our world and our country being transformed. In goodness, I hope I'm wrong, but there's a lot more coming, and we need to be aware of it. Regardless of your opinion on that, you need to be aware of it. We need to be able to see these things, and we need to be able to call them out. And we're going to get to the application of what do we do in just a few minutes here, because there's a lot of very important points there. But we need to recognize it. That's the first thing. You can't cure what you don't understand. Okay, this is why my friend Michael Fallon always loves to share this this quote. He has a podcast named after it, but Virgil, who was a poet in the BC times, he said, "Blessed are those who understand the causes of things." We need to stop assuming that everything we see is a coincidence. We need to be as wise as serpents and as gentle as doves. And both of those things are equally important here. That passage gives us the key to what we need to do, which we'll get to in just a minute here. But so again, you see this idea of transforming the world. This is what's happening. Everything you always saw as a norm, all of it is being changed. All of it is being transformed. And this is becoming undeniable. Okay? This is meant to cause disorder. This is woke praxis. It's putting these ideologies, these theories into practice. That's exactly what it is. And it's meant to replace the norm. And it's continually doing that. And this is what's referred to, the process of this at least, is what's referred to as the Hegelian dialect. Now, some of you have probably heard of this, especially if you've maybe taken like a college class on philosophy or something like that. And I'm going to do my best to just, we're not going to make the whole episode about this, but it's very important. I'm going to do my best to try to explain it as quickly and I guess simply as I can. But the Hegel's dialect, I'll get the complicated terms out of the way. It's this idea of there being a thesis and then an antithesis or an antithesis. And then after that, you arrive at the synthesis. Now, what do I mean by that? I said I was going to make it simple and I used a bunch of words that none of us would ever use. Okay, well, a simple way to explain this is they create the problem and then they create and control the reaction and then comes the solution. So you have problem, reaction, solution. Problem, reaction, solution. You have to remember that. Problem, reaction, solution. So the problem here is presented. What's the problem in this case? Well, the problem is the trans community is just, they're being killed all the time and they're being oppressed and they're being, you know, fill in the blank. Okay, so they create the problem. Now what they're going to do is, you guessed it, they're going to look for a reaction from you. Okay, so this thing takes place on Easter, this holiday. Well, what's that supposed to do? That's supposed to make Christians angry. That's supposed to provoke you. Okay, this is provocative. And it's been referred to as you have the original provocation, but then you'll have escalating provocations. And what that is if you've ever had like, I don't know, maybe like two kids who are like fairly close in age, and they do that thing where they'll put their finger toward the sibling, and it's like they're maybe a half inch away, and they say, "No, I'm not touching you. See, I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you." And finally, the sibling snaps, but you only saw the sibling snap. You didn't see them provoking them, and the sibling gets in trouble. That's what's happening here. Okay, this is called escalating provocations. They're going to push it a little more and a little more and a little more so that you will react. It is important that you don't react how they want you to, no matter what the provocation is. A, as an American, don't react how they want you to, but B, as a Christian, do not ever react in a Christ-like manner. Not only is it wrong and not only is it sinful, but it's something that the woke will hold against you forever. It's a trap. Okay, so you have the problem created, you have the solution or the reaction controlled, the reaction created, and then you come in with the quote-unquote solution. So you have the problem, reaction, solution. And if you picture the Hegelian dialect idea, picture like a cone. Like there's a cone sitting on a parking lot or on the floor or whatever. But instead of just like a traffic cone, it's like a spiral in the shape of a cone. And so each time this happens, each time you have this problem, reaction, solution, they go a little bit further up the cone. And then again, you'll have the next problem, reaction, solution, and they go a little bit further up the cone. And so this is just going to get further and further and further up the cone as it goes. And each time, in some sense, there's going to be a new standard, a new norm, closer to what is supposed to be accomplished here. And that, as we've talked about many times and as we've seen, is a communist nation. That's what equity is. So the closer, the further up this cone that you go, the closer you're getting to this communist utopia, so to speak. Now, I said I would keep it short, so I am, and I did. I kept it short. That's the concept, at least in a nutshell, and that's what's happening here. Okay, so they present a problem. They provoke you with that problem, specifically Christians here. Not only Christians, but especially Christians. They want to provoke you. They want you to react. They want you to do something drastic, but we cannot do that. Do not give in to that. And that's why I actually think it was such a wonderful thing to see so many people filling up churches on Sunday. okay, not forming angry mobs, not giving them the reaction they want, not getting on social media, and just blowing up and saying, look, see what they did. Well, of course that's what they did. It's not an accident. There's a reason such provocative language was used in that proclamation, like extreme, for example. But you can't do it. It was so wonderful to see so many people at church. So number one, don't be a reactionary. Don't give them the reaction they want. James Lindsay has this awesome phrase, which is, your reaction is the real action. If you don't give a big reaction, then it's not going anywhere. They're going to have to try something else. So that's number one. Do not be a reactionary. Do not react in the way that they want you to react. Number two, react in a Christ-like manner. Now remember, a Christ-like manner does not mean to be stupid. It doesn't mean to pretend something isn't happening. It doesn't mean to be naive. Christ was none of these things. And I should say, is none of these things. Okay? Christ is loving. Christ is also firm. Christ is also wise. He's not naive. He knows what's going on. He wasn't afraid to call out hypocritical sin. And of course, if you're going to call out hypocritical sin, you better make sure you're not doing the same thing and being hypocritical. So we need to expose these things. We need to do it in a Christ-like manner. Remember, be as wise as a serpent and as gentle as a dove. We have to do that. Otherwise, you're giving into exactly what they want you to give into. So be as wise as a serpent, be as gentle as a dove. But in terms of a physical response, and this is number three, I kind of included it in number two. Number three is that we have to call it out and expose it everywhere it is. Okay, so whenever you see this kind of thing happening, whether it's having to do with systemic racism, whether it's having to do with the LGBT community, whether it's having to do with the environment, whether it's having to do with, you know, fill in the blank, we have to be able to see it and call it out and not give a big reaction. And I know I'm emphasizing that a lot, but it's very important because it's what you're seeing everywhere. And if we continually do that, if we continually overreact and give big reactions without any kind of plan and without any kind of wisdom, then we're going to lose. We need to see and recognize the games that they're playing. We need to recognize when we're being manipulated. We need to recognize when we're being gaslighted. We need to recognize when our children are being groomed, when our teenagers are being groomed. We need to recognize these things and not be afraid to call them out. Wokeness is not only wrong, okay, as we've seen here and elsewhere, it's also a religion. And last I checked, you're not supposed to worship a false god. When did the Biden administration make this proclamation? Do you remember? On Good Friday. We will not win if we don't recognize these strategies, if we don't call them out, and if we don't react properly, not giving the reaction and the provocation that they want from you, but giving the reaction Christ wants from you. Thank you for listening to The Universe Next Door. Don't forget to hit follow wherever you're listening and share this episode with a friend. We'll see you back here next week for our series on Are You Sure You Know What That Verse Means? And hope you have a blessed week.